is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish Home Machine, which is perfect for these crazy times when gyms and schools are closed. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Danny Gallagher, girls varsity head coach at Magnificat High School, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering new subscribers 10% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code SAVE10 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. We are almost to the NBA's trade deadline. We have had two, I guess you would call them, pretty major injuries that have an effect on both the playoff races, the MVP race, and the Rookie of the Year race. So that's just a few of the things that we're going to hit on tonight, Jay. And we're also going to be welcoming a new NBA podcast to our Hoopheads Pod Network. Lakers Fast Break is going to be joining us, and so we're excited about that. We're going to hopefully do a little crossover episode with them on late Friday night, so probably you'll post on Saturday. So we're continuing to add more and more NBA content. So if you're looking for coverage of, for certain, the LA Lakers, we have you covered between LA Hoops, hashtag Lakers, and now adding Lakers Fast Break as well. We're going to have the Lakers covered from every angle. And I'm sure we're going to talk some Lakers tonight as we get into LeBron and the whole playoff race.
Why?
I don't. Seems like they're a popular team to talk about.
Apparently. No, yeah. But before we talk about them, Mike, I have to address the elephant in the room.
What's that?
Our March Madness predictions are not very good.
Now, I want to be clear here, Mike. Your teams are all like basically out. However, I just want to put this out there. In a completely legal bracket that I'm in. Nothing nefarious here. Bracketology.
Okay.
I am in first place. I picked Gonzaga to win, and I have three teams. I have Gonzaga, Michigan, and Baylor. They were my three of the final four teams. But more impressively, I have another bracket in the same pool that's in ninth place, and I have all four final four teams still. Mike, all four final four teams. With the destruction that has happened, I managed to pull it off where I have four final four teams still in the mix, and that's my bracket that has Michigan winning it all. So,
all right. Well, there you go. Well, I had the Ohio State Buckeyes simply because they were a two seed, and at least it gave me a rooting interest for a local team.
I thought you said it was because it was the only game you watched. Wasn't that what you said last week?
I'm saying it's not based on any. It's not based on any type of actual institutional knowledge of college basketball. Although I will say I have enjoyed watching the games in the tournament. I've watched quite a bit of it actually. And I found it to be very entertaining. It almost felt like, and I know there were fans. It was interesting because you can kind of zero in on all the people who are acting crazy, whether it's the parents or the wife of the coach or the few fans that are in the arena. It is kind of funny to be able to see those people kind of up close and follow them.
You just
them
like
while
the dancers. That's what you like, the dancing, the group that was. What team was that?
I forget.
I think it was Loyola, wasn't it? Loyola?
It might have been Loyola. That was when they were passing the dance moves from one person to another.
Yeah, it was Loyola.
Yeah, that was pretty good. By the way, Loyola was awesome against Illinois. That was the most impressive, I think, performance that I saw in terms of just a team being able to execute on both ends of the floor.
I'm assuming you didn't watch the game last night, right? When Kansas just got obliterated by USC. I watched that one out
of the corner of my eye, mostly just to kind of keep an eye on Evan Mobley, who I don't know. I don't think he has any chance of upstaging Cade Cunningham, barring something, I guess, crazy going on with the Yijian Lan chairs during workouts. To me, Cunningham is a way better prospect than Evan Mobley. I don't see Mobley as being in the class of Cade Cunningham, yeah, especially as a big guy. I don't see what people are seeing with him. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't see it.
I'm gonna counterpoint you, Mike. I don't see what people are seeing in Cade Cunningham in the two games that I watched. Now, I've watched some glimpses, and I know statistically he looks really good, but he looked so passive in that game yesterday or two nights ago. He looked so passive.
The question, though, is, and it's weird because I guess I feel sort of the same way in looking at it and thinking about it. Like, I think back to when I think of a guy kind of putting a team on his back and carrying them to a title. Like, you think of Carmelo with Syracuse, and he just put that team on his back as a freshman and carried them all the way through the tournament. And then you look at Cade Cunningham, and he obviously didn't do that. But you just wonder, like, his teammates and some of the shots they took down the stretch of that game were a little bit questionable. And yeah, maybe you could say he was
almost
passive,
like Van Gundy was coaching that team.
Yeah, but one of the things I think that, and this goes to the whole conundrum that we've had kind of with LeBron throughout his entire career, at least I have, where you start talking about is it good to make the right basketball play, or is it good to kind of force things because you're the best player? And how much of him being passive was just the fact that his teammates and his coach are out to lunch and they're taking shots and not getting him the ball when they should, versus him kind of going and demanding the ball? I don't know how you balance that out. What I will say about Cunningham is the guy can shoot the ball, and he's 6'8", and he's a really good passer. I think the one knock on him, and I think you saw it a little bit in the tournament, is he's not an ultra freakish NBA athlete. I mean, he's a good athlete, but he's not an unbelievable athlete. But I think what's going to make him successful in the league is the combination of his ability to shoot the ball and his ability to pass at the size that he is at 6'8".
What's a comp to him in the current NBA? I would, like, when I hear 6'8" shooter, I think Brandon Ingram. He's better than Brandon Ingram
because he's better than that as a playmaker. I almost look at him as, I don't think he's as gifted of a passer as LeBron and Luka, but he's that style of player in terms of being a passer. I think he's a better shooter than Luka. I don't think he gets to his spots as easily as Luka does, and he's obviously not as good of an athlete as LeBron. But I think I see him in that sort of big playmaking wing type player who can shoot. And I think, to me, the shooting is what stands out that's going to allow him to be successful. And maybe that makes up for the half step slower that he is than maybe a guy like LeBron or like Kawhi, okay, that type of player. So is he a guy who steps in on day one as a 19 or 20-year-old and makes the same impact as, for example, Luka did or Zion has?
Probably not.
I don't know. I kinda don't think so.
I think his thing is gonna be situation. I really do. Where is he gonna end up? Is he gonna end up in Minnesota in that dumpster fire? Is he going to end up, or can he even end up in Minnesota? I don't even know. Does Minnesota have their pick? I don't know. Where is he going to end up? That's the question. And
Minnesota keeps the pick if it's in the top
three?
Three, I believe, yeah.
Okay, well, if he ends up in Minnesota, I don't know about his luck. I don't know how that's going to look.
Minnesota's so turning around. You're not buying that?
No, I'm not. You're not buying the
Chris Finch Minnesota turnaround?
No, I'm not. I'm not buying it at all.
All right.
Based on the players they're supposedly trying to trade for right now.
You're not buying Anthony Edwards, now the rookie of the year?
He's not going to be the rookie of the year. We get into this discussion. I think LaMelo is still the rookie of the year, Mike.
Nah, there's no way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's missing. I mean, what, 40% of the season?
I think he wins the rookie of the year.
Nah, there's no way.
Okay. I believe Embiid won Rookie of the Year only playing 50 games. So I'm just putting in, if you play proportionally.
It's like Zion not winning it last year.
I'm telling you. Zion didn't play as many games as LaMelo played.
No, I don't think he did. LaMelo also impacted
the team in a positive way. I'm just saying, like, I think LaMelo wins the Rookie of the Year regardless. And this is a discussion we were going to get into here. We didn't even do my starters yet. But I think LaMelo wins the Rookie of the Year, Mike, right now. If he doesn't play another game, I think he wins. And there's two reasons why. One, he's impacted winning, and that's huge. Anthony Edwards has not impacted winning. The Minnesota Timberwolves.
Wait, stop. Hold on. Wait. I don't know if I believe that.
You don't believe Anthony Edwards hasn't impacted? What do you mean?
The Minnesota Timberwolves have won 10 games. He's impacted 10 games. He's helped them to win 10 games.
Well, except that's not true because they won three games at the beginning of the season. Remember how everyone was like, oh, look at Minnesota. They're good. And Anthony Edwards scored like single-digit points in those games and wasn't really doing anything. He's won them maybe, I'm going to say, two or three games.
I agree. Look, is there anybody else that could be considered? I think Halliburton is the only other guy that you could legitimately make a case for. I don't think there's a case for anybody else besides. Well,
they're also terrible too. They're bad too.
Right. I don't think that you can make a case for anybody besides LaMelo, Anthony Edwards, and Halliburton. That's not to say that there aren't other rookies who are contributing and doing things, but as far as being the Rookie of the Year, I don't see anybody under consideration.
Okay, so here's my litmus test, Mike.
Okay.
If we were to look at trends, and I know NBA looks at trends. If we were to look at trends as far as Twitter trends.
Okay.
LaMelo has stolen the show over everyone. And I know Zion stole the show last year, but Zion played like 25% of the games. He didn't even play, like, how many games has Charlotte played right now? They've had to play over six. They've got to be at 60% of their games for the season.
Let me check here.
The
Charlotte Hornets have played 42 games.
Okay, so 42.
Out of 72.
Okay, so that's over 60%, right? 42 out of 72 is over 60%.
Four out of seven. You're supposed to be a math teacher, man. You're making me pull out the kids.
They're right at 60%. They're at 58.33333%. I'm telling you, if we looked at Zion's numbers, he played 25% of the games last year.
Okay, look, I think here's what it comes down to. If Anthony Edwards is terrible for the rest of the season, then maybe LaMelo wins it. If Anthony Edwards plays better, continues to play well, I'm going to give you his stats in the last 10 games. Are you ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you have any idea what they are?
Well, there's an outlier there because he had 41.
I know he had a 42-point game. Yeah, he had 42 in a game. But he's averaging – okay, I'm going to give you his season averages versus his last 10 games average. For the season, he's shooting 38% from the field. Not good. Last 10 games, he's shooting 42%. Still not good. From three, he's shooting 31.8. For the regular season, 32.2. So similar. Shooting 76% from the line over the, and then over his last 10, he's shooting 70. He's averaging 5.5 rebounds in the last 10 versus 4.3 in the regular season. Assists, he's averaging 2.4 over the last 10, 2.6 over the course of the season. So not much there. The big difference is a jump up in points. He's averaging 24.5 points a game in his last 10. So yeah, that 42 point is an outlier, but that maybe only adds, let's say it adds 2 points a game to that average. He's still averaging 22 a game. If he finishes the season and he averages 22 a game for the last, whatever, 30 games of the season, he's going to be the Rookie of the Year. I just don't think you're going to give it to LaMelo if Anthony Edwards puts up those kinds of numbers, especially if Minnesota can win a couple games here and there, which you might think with Cat back that they might be able to do that.
Okay. I think LaMelo ends up winning it. I'm going to say that right now.
All right, that's fair. Look, I told you I thought LaMelo had the biggest chance to be a bust out of the guys in the top 10, and he's the one guy that I said I was hoping the Cavs didn't get. So I was clearly wrong. And speaking of being wrong – looking at the Timberwolves roster and knowing that there was another guy on their roster who I wanted in the draft. So my draft abilities may not be everything that I had cracked them up to be.
Yeah,
Jared Culver was the guy that I wanted the Cavs to pick whatever 2 years ago.
Listen,
and he's been buried in Minnesota. I still think he could be a productive player, and maybe it's just the dysfunction in Minnesota, but he has not done much in his NBA career.
So what you're saying is Matt Maurer shouldn't be looking to hire you for the draft review.
No, not unless I'm going to do a little bit more research and more than watching a couple games. Let's put it that way.
Yep. All right. So let's get back to my game here. We're going to get to the game. We're 14 minutes in. We've covered the Rookie of the Year. We've covered March Madness. Now we're going to talk about two people that have made starts in the NBA this year. I want to see if you can name the team. Now, I'm going to give you the easy one first. Now, the only reason I'm choosing this person is I knew he was still in the NBA because he's not really that antiquated, but I did not know he was on this team, Mike, when I was doing my research for this. So here you go. You ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
He's a former Hornet.
Okay.
Frank Kaminsky.
Frank Kaminsky is on the Phoenix Suns.
Wow, I'm impressed, Mike. He started 15 games for them this year.
Yeah, he's played a lot. He's played a lot of minutes. In certain lineups, they've played him, and then Saric have kind of gone back and forth, I think, with that spot in terms of different lineups and who the matchups are and who Phoenix is playing on a given night. But yeah, Frank the Tank is.
I'm impressed that you knew that right off the bat. I did not know he was a Phoenix Sun member.
Yeah, he's gotten a lot of minutes.
All right.
Go ahead.
No, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say that at some point, there was some podcast talk about Frank Kaminsky, and I can't remember which podcast it was that I was listening to, but they discussed sort of this in depth when they talked about the Phoenix Suns and how Kaminsky has been really good for them, and that him and Saric have kind of flip-flopped depending on the matchups. So
all right, well,
that's why.
There you go. One for one. Let's see if you can make it two for two, Mike.
All right, good.
Justin Patton.
That sounds like a guy who might be your local congressperson. Does not sound like
an
NBA
Matt
player.
That's Matt Patton.
All right, there you go. So I am going to – shout out to Matt Patton if you're listening. I'm going to go with a complete and utter guess because I can honestly say I've never heard of Justin Patton.
He started eight games.
Let's just take a look at our NBA standings and see if we can't figure out what team Justin Patton might be on.
After your first guess, I can give you a clue.
Okay. So I'm going to say – Justin Patton. That sounds like a guy who would play for. I'm gonna guess he's getting some minutes for the Golden State Warriors.
No, that's incorrect. Here's your hint.
Okay.
The head coach of this team, his father used to be the Cavs coach.
His father used to be the Cavs coach. Oh, okay. So he plays for the Cavs?
No. His father used to be the Cavs coach.
His father was the Cavs coach.
The guy who coaches the current team.
His father was the Cavs coach. Okay.
For LeBron's first season.
Oh, Steven Silas, the Houston Rockets.
There you go.
Got it.
So if I wouldn't have given me that, you think you would have eventually?
I would have gotten to that part of it, but I had never heard of Justin Patton. So eight games for the Rockets.
Yeah.
Wow.
Listen, maybe that explains
where did he go to school. Where did he go to school?
I don't have that. Hold on, I don't have that in front of me. Hold on 1 second. I got you. Justin Patton, American basketball player. He played for the. Oh, his nickname is Big Muddy. He went to Creighton, Sweet 16 team.
Big
Sweet
Muddy.
16, Big Muddy. He was
All
born
right, well, one for two.
He was born in Omaha, Nebraska.
Nice. There you go. And he stayed home to go to school.
He's played 20 NBA games. He's played 11 this season and started 8 of them.
And he opened. Well, did he play in the last game when they won, or has he taken an L in every game of his career?
I don't know the answer to that question.
Talk about a guy who's not impacting winning. Anyway, yeah. All right, give us the third one.
No, I only hit two tonight, Mike. I decided.
Only had two.
I mean, I'll give you another one. I got another one. I've got one here. I was just trying to.
Come on, look. Come on, look.
Okay,
something up.
Dwayne Bacon.
Dwayne Bacon.
It's not Dwayne. Breakfast. It's not breakfast time.
No, I know. I'm aware of Dwayne Bacon.
I know
as
you're
an
aware.
NBA player,
I knew so, you'd be aware of Dwayne Bacon.
So that's
but
one
would
step ahead.
One
step ahead of Justin Patton. I'm going to say that Dwayne Bacon. Can I give you? Well, I'm going to go in. Or I have three teams in mind that I think he might play
for. Give me the
simply
three
because
teams.
I'm not sure why these three teams have popped into my head, but. Maybe he's played for them at some point in his career. I'm going to say my first choice is going to be the New York Knicks.
Well, are you going to give me all three, and then I'll tell you if one of them's correct?
So that one's wrong. Just tell me it's wrong.
That's wrong.
Okay. My other team is the Atlanta Hawks.
That's wrong.
And my last team is the Sacramento Kings.
You were closer with Atlanta.
Okay. I got nothing.
It's a popular tourist destination.
Orlando.
It is the Orlando Magic. There you go.
Okay. Dwayne Bacon. All right.
he started 9 games this season, so I'm pretty sure.
All right. Well, I'd like to see what I want to get. I want to get his career stats. I want to see what teams he's played for. Let me see if I can pull that up.
Dwayne Bacon. Here we go. Dwayne Bacon has played for the Charlotte and Orlando. That's it.
That's it. Wow. Well, I was totally wrong.
And I lied. He started 26 games this year. What was I saying? He started 26 games this year, Mike. It's crazy.
It's not speaking well for our knowledge of the NBA. This is making us look really bad.
Well, I mean, the Orlando Magic are terrible. So he's averaging 10 points a game this year, though. So he's at least, like, serviceable.
He's a legitimate NBA player.
Yeah, he's not Justin Patton. He's played 25 minutes a game this season. That's a pretty good stat line.
That is.
His shooting percentage is better than who was it that we were just talking about? He's shooting 43%.
Better than Anthony Edwards?
Better than Anthony Edwards. That's not a good sign for Anthony Edwards. Anyways, so there's our game for the day. Guess the starting team. So, well, let me tell you, Thrive Fantasy, Mike, is not going to let you pick Dwayne Bacon stats. They're not going to let you pick Justin Patton stats. Frank Kaminsky, probably not either. But what Thrive Fantasy is, it's a new world of fantasy sports gambling. You select 10 props that each carry a point total based on their likelihood of happening. You're going to use promo code HOOPHEADS when you sign up today, and you will receive an instant deposit match up to $50 on your first deposit of $20 or more. Download Thrive Fantasy in the App Store or Play Store or by visiting the website www.thrivefantasy.com. Sign up, Mike, and prop up today. There you go. So, Mike, we have to talk about LeBron's injury and the impact. I think we can safely say that now LeBron has been eliminated from MVP contention. I think Embiid is eliminated from MVP contention. I'm willing to say that because I don't think he's going to be back within that 2-week window. We're at a week, and he's still in a boot, or he's still like.
You don't think Embiid is coming back in 2 weeks?
I don't think Embiid's coming back in 2 weeks. I don't think LeBron's coming back. LeBron's in a boot. I don't think there's any way he's back in a month. I think he's a monther. I'm going to guess that right now. And we'll get into the Lakers playoff implications here and what that really means. It doesn't mean anything for the Lakers. Does seed really matter for the Lakers? But let's talk MVP first. I think that's where we need to start. I think now, Mike, if you 2 weeks ago bet on Dame Lillard, you're really liking this right now. Because once again, I think Giannis has the window now, Mike. He has the window. The Bucks have won 7 in a row. They're looking really good. Drew Holiday's looking really good, but Giannis is definitely the engine that makes that team go. He's playing more minutes. I've said it time and time again. I don't think there's any way they vote for him to win it. The window is open now, Mike. The window is open for a 3 straight MVP for Giannis. And it could happen. But I put it down to I think it's a 3-person race now. I think it's Giannis, I think it's Jokic, and I think it's Dame Dalla. What do you think?
I think at this point, it's Jokic's to lose, I think, at this point, simply because of the narrative with Giannis. I think if it was, if Giannis did not already have two MVPs in his back pocket, then I think Giannis probably, in all honesty, would be the favorite, because Milwaukee's going to end up, I would guess, with a better record than Denver. And Giannis has a greater impact as a two-way player as compared to Jokic. He's not that Jokic's defense is horrible, but he certainly isn't the type of impact defender that Giannis is, as he was defensive player of the year last year. So clearly he has a bigger effect on the game on the defensive end of the floor. But I think there's a narrative out there that people just aren't going to vote for Giannis. And it's understandable with the performances of the Bucks in the last two playoffs, with the fact that he's already won two. And if you give him three in a row, we talked about it last week, that puts him in the company of Bill Russell, Wilt, and Larry Bird. And each of those guys had already won a title in one of their first two MVP seasons. It seems unlikely that voters would vote for him. And yet, I think he has a statistical case, and he probably has a subjective case for being the MVP again this year, especially, I don't know, I forget. I don't think he's sat. He maybe has sat out one or two games, but he's basically played the entire season. And chances are, if he does that and Jokic does that, I would guess that the voters are going to go to Jokic. I don't think Dame has a legitimate chance
to win it. Straight to the heart, man.
I don't think he has a legitimate chance to win it. That's not to say that he's not, quote, in the discussion. That's not to say that he couldn't, as things are currently constituted. Oh, that's a good word.
Constituted, is that a word?
I think what I was trying to say
was up is constituted.
That's a good one. I think I was trying to say constituted, but anyway.
Oh, constituted. That, be a constituted. Oh, no. Constituted isn't an actual word. It is constituted. Sorry. I just wanted to make sure you...
Constituted is the word I was looking for.
This is your English definition.
At any rate, I think that Dame is definitely... He definitely warrants being in the conversation, but I don't think there's any way that he surpasses either of those two guys as the MVP, especially because you look at Portland, and I know we're going to talk about standings and teams that are hot and not, but I think that when you look at where Portland is now, they're at the sixth spot. Maybe they could get to number five if the Lakers fall, as I'm anticipating that they're going to be in a direct free fall very soon, if not what started tonight against the Pelicans. But I just don't. I don't see Dame surpassing.
So can I ask a question? Then I want to just ask you this question.
Sure.
Denver's one spot, one game ahead of them. What's the difference? Explain to me the difference. Jokic has they haven't had anyone get seriously injured this year. They've had people out because of COVID. They haven't had serious injuries this year. Dame Lillard literally is carrying a team that his second and third best player have been injured for 25% of the season, 50% of the season.
I just think that Dame is who Dame is. Is this season any more of an outlier of any other Dame season? I think Jokic, because he's a center, because he's doing something that is completely unique for his position, I think that gives him a story that Lillard doesn't have. I think the story that Lillard has to tell is just his clutch moments and his clutch shooting, and all those things are things that should weigh on voters' minds. But I do think that because Jokic is such a unique player at the center position, because of his playmaking, because of his ability to be the hub of an offense for a team, I think to me that just pushes him ahead of where Dame is. And on the Giannis side of it, I think we just talked about it, that because he's such a two-way force, I think that elevates him ahead of where Dame is.
Okay.
So
I mean, that's fair.
That's where I come down on the thing. Look, I'm not saying that that's the right narrative. I'm just saying I think that is the right narrative. So if you look at, okay, Lillard is, by all objectives, he's a point guard. Okay, I'm looking at his stats. So he's averaging 7.6 assists. And then you have Jokic, who's a center, and he's averaging, I think, just a shade under 10. Let me pull Jokic's stats up. But I think he's averaging just a shade under 10 assists per game. So when you start talking about that, now you're like, oh, man.
Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
Last 3 minutes of the game, Who do you want on your team?
Are you asking me if I want Dame? Is that what you're getting at?
Do you want Dame or do you want Jokic? The last 3 minutes of the team game. If it's a 1 point game, either way, who do you want on your team?
I would happily take either one. I'm gonna be honest.
That's not an answer.
I would happily take either one.
Let me read you Lillard's stats.
Do you have this year's clutch shooting?
Oh, I do. I'm right here.
For Jokic too?
Oh, I don't have Jokic. I got Lillard. But I guarantee you, I'm gonna tell you that the stats.
You're going to be stunned when you look it up.
Lillard leads the league in clutch points with 124. He's shooting 60.3% from the field at 35 of 58. He's 53.3% from three-point range, and he's 100% at the foul line, 38 out of 38 in clutch situations. Going deeper in the final minute of the games with a point difference of 5 or fewer, Lillard leads the NBA with 57 points while shooting 12 of 18 overall, 5 of 9 of threes, and 28 of 28 on free throws. For Lillard, so there you go. So those are just clutch stats. This was an article written this article was written on St. Patrick's Day after that game when we were actually recorded the episode, and then he went nuts right after that. So I just want, you know, if I'm having to pick someone that I want on my floor in a game that's a 5 point game in the last 2 minutes, I want Dame Lillard in the NBA. I'd take him over anyone. Hey, that's LeBron, that's Giannis, it's everyone. I'd take Dame Lillard right now. You don't have anything all to right. say? I've left all of his speeches.
No, I think
this might be the first time ever Mike's speechless.
I think that's fair. I think it's fair. I would not. Let's put it this way. I would not argue against Dame Lillard in any way, shape, or form. I would not argue against him. And yet, at the same time, I think that Jokic has proven himself both this year and in previous playoff runs to be a very, very clutch scorer, despite the fact that he does not look like what you would think a clutch scorer would look like. We usually don't think of centers, number one, of being clutch scorers, and then we certainly don't think of big, kind of slow, lumbering centers as being clutch players. But I've seen him make too many clutch shots to discount that.
So you want me here? I can give you. I got Jokic's stats pulled up. You ready?
I'm ready.
They're not as succinct because this is NBA's website, so they're averaging. They're averaging it per game. Like, I don't have his overall. Right. So yeah, he's been in 19 clutch games versus Dame's 28. He's averaging 4.5 points in clutch minutes, so not terrible. Okay. He's shooting 50% versus Dame shooting 59%. He's shooting 21% from behind the arc versus Dame's 48.5% from behind the arc. Free throw percentage, he's shooting 84% in clutch minutes, which is still pretty good. It's pretty good. Okay, he's averaging, rebounds. He's averaging 2 rebounds in clutch minutes. And so those. I mean, they're not that far off of Dame stats.
Bottom line is they're both clutch players. I think that what pushes Jokic ahead of him is the fact that he's a center and he's doing something.
That wasn't the question I asked you though, Mike. I said, who would you rather have in the last 2 minutes of the game? If you're telling me you'd rather have Jokic, say it. I don't think I'd rather have Jokic in the last 2 minutes of a game when it's a 2 point game. That's my question. I'm not discounting your thought that he's a better player and he deserves it more and he's probably going to win.
I think I'd rather have Lillard. I think I'd rather have Lillard, but it's a lot closer than what the average person.
Do you know
in
clutch games
thinks.
here's the big difference. Their win loss. You ready?
Yep.
Dame Lillard, 24 games. The Portland Trail Blazers are 18-6.
Okay.
The Denver Nuggets in 19 games. Their record's 9-10.
Look, it's fair. Nobody's going to argue against Damian Lillard's ability to produce in crunch time. There's too many highlights out there of him finishing off teams, not just in the regular season, but in the playoffs. So I guess the one argument that I would have for Jokic over Lillard is just the the size factor and maybe the ability to get a shot off over top of somebody. But when Lillard can shoot from out at half court, it really doesn't, you know, really doesn't matter. So I would take Lillard by a hair over Jokic in that case. But when it comes to the MVP, I really don't think that Lillard has, I don't think he has a legitimate chance to win it. I think it comes down to if Embiid or LeBron can get back on the floor sooner than we think, then either one of them could still potentially be in the conversation. If that doesn't happen and they're both out long enough that that precludes them from winning it, then I think you're looking at it's Jokic's trophy to lose. He'd either have to get hurt, Denver would kind of have to fall off a cliff, or he'd have to play really poorly, and then maybe Giannis swoops in and takes it kind of by default, even though he's going to have statistics that are going to be on par, if not better, than one or both of his MVP seasons when all is said and done. So,
okay, well, just so you know, betting favorites right now is Nikola Jokic, just so you know, according to onlinegambling.com, written a article written by Paulie McGuire. Here comes the Joker with his silly grin is the first line. So there you go.
Nice. There you go.
So Jokic is number one. Embiid is still number two. LeBron is still number three. Giannis is four. Harden is five. Luka is six. And Dame's all the way at seven. I would put Dame over Luka right now. Come on now. This is ridiculous. And, you know, our disdain for James Harden. Come on now.
You can't let Harden win the award. I don't care what he does.
He fatted his way out of Houston. Okay, come on now.
I can't see rewarding that behavior. I can't see voters allowing themselves to cast a vote for him, given the way the season started in Houston. I just don't see it. And he, don't get me wrong, he's been phenomenal. And Brooklyn may yet end up with the number one seed in the East. And that's going to be built largely on his back, especially since Kyrie's now going to be out three games.
Dealing with family matters, and Durant's still not healthy.
And Durant, who knows? Durant's starting to get worrisome. If I'm a Brooklyn fan, I'm starting to get a little nervous about Durant and just what's going on with his lower body. And maybe it's a case of one injury leads to a different injury because you're slightly favoring something. And who knows? I don't want to speculate, but I'd be getting a little nervous if I was a Brooklyn Nets fan as to whether or not I'm going to see a healthy Kevin Durant at all for the remainder of the season, or if I'm going to see him for any sustained length of time. Maybe he comes back for a couple games and then goes down with another leg ailment. So it's concerning if I'm a Brooklyn Nets fan.
Yeah, for sure. And you know what? I don't know what we're going to see, Mike, but I know what we're going to hear. A word from our sponsors.
Hey Hoopheads, we all hate ankle sprains, and they happen way too often. Ankle injuries are the number one sports-related injury. Arise is trying to change that. With the iFast, your athletes get preventative protection and full mobility. Athletes no longer need to wear bulky braces that limit performance and give mediocre protection. Anyone playing sports should be using these products. Keep your athletes in the game. Don't wait for them to get hurt to take action. Visit www.arise.com, spelled A-R-Y-S-E, and use the code HOOPHEADS to get 20% off the future of performance. That's A-R-Y-S-E.com with promo code HOOPHEADS to get 20% off.
All right, we are back. We're going to talk about the biggest winners and losers of the last week. We have to start with the biggest winners in the whole NBA. We've already mentioned them, the Milwaukee Bucks. They've won seven in a row. They are still not in number one seed because the Sixers, despite the Embiid injury, have held on to the number one seed. And right now, they are absolutely – well, they were killing the Warriors, but the Warriors have climbed back into it. So maybe that lead's not going to be as big as it is, but – the Philly's still in the number one seed despite Embiid's injury, but they're a game up on they're a game and a half on Milwaukee. Brooklyn's a game up on Philly. But Milwaukee, seven in a row. Giannis has looked good. Like I said before, Jrue Holiday's look good. I don't really know that I have anything else to add to that. I did take a look at minutes, and Giannis definitely is playing more minutes right now, Mike, by like a minute and a half
over
he's
the
averaging
last
like 36. Yeah, he's averaging like 36
so
minutes.
So he was averaging for the season. For the season, he's averaging like I believe it was 33.5, 34, and over the last 10 games, it's jumped big time. So that's, you know, maybe there are actually looking at that. So he's averaging for the season 34.2, but he's been averaging like 36 over the last 5 or 6 games. So good sign, maybe. I mean, I still think he should be playing like 38 to 40 minutes, but, you know, it is regular the regular season.
Look, regular season is fine. Like, I don't care. Regular season, you want to play him 32 minutes a night, fine. But he has to be able to – he has to be able to play 40 to 43 minutes in playoff games. He just has to. And so maybe this is a trend that they're just trying to stretch him out and see what that looks like. The only thing I'll say about Giannis is something that I've mentioned the last couple podcasts is his free throw percentage continues to stay above 75%. So in his last 10, he's at 77.5%. And if he can make 75% of his free throws, it puts a whole different geometry to what the Bucks can do at the end of games. Because if he can get to the basket and get fouled and feel confident that he's going to go up and he's going to make 3 out of every 4, that makes a huge, huge difference if he's confident in the line and he can knock him down when it comes to the end of games. Because we know he's still not going to be that great isolation scorer. But if you can get him in the post or he can take the ball to the basket, and if he does get fouled, he can step to the line and make his free throws, that makes a huge difference for the Bucks. And I guess the only other thing that the big Bucks news this week was the acquisition of P.J. Tucker. So you have any take on – have a thought on P.J. Tucker? Does he make a difference? Does he not? What's your feeling?
I mean, he's never been on a winner, so my answer is no.
He's never been on a championship team, but he was a really good player for the Houston Rockets. Yeah, playing, but playing off James Harden.
What's his stance this year? He's been terrible. Oh,
he's been terrible this year. But
I'm pretty sure you could go stand in the corner and shoot better than he's shot this year, Mike.
The argument for P.J. Tucker is he's playing for a terrible Houston Rockets team. He's kind of checked out. He wants to get out of there. He comes to Milwaukee, and he's rejuvenated as a Buck. And if you look at what Milwaukee has been and what they have, so they got Jrue Holiday, who's obviously been a key pickup. He's obviously an upgrade over anything that they had before. You clearly would rather have him in your lineup than Eric Bledsoe, especially come playoff time. But now Milwaukee's problem is, what do you do with that fifth starting spot?
It's not PJ Tucker. Come on, Mike. He's played 2 games for them. He's played 12 minutes a game and has not scored yet. He's played 25 minutes, Mike. He's played 25 minutes in 2 games and hasn't scored. He is not a starter. Give me a break, Mike. Come on now.
Theoretical PJ Tucker?
No. PJ Tucker, no, he's
washed.
Even
want theoretical PJ Tucker?
He's washed.
So you don't think he has any impactful moments for the Bucks? You think this is window dressing.
100% window dressing. He is not a guy that they can turn to and say, dude, you're going to go play 25 minutes. You're going to go play 20 minutes. He is not a starter for this team. If he is a starter for your team ain't winning the East, boys. Just saying it right now. There's no way. No way. If they trot him out there in the playoff series as a starter, like, I'm going to laugh. It's a joke. Done.
All right, who do you want? Who are you starting? Who's playing who's playing crunch time minutes for you?
Not PJ Tucker.
Brook Lopez?
I would rather have Brook Lopez.
Bobby Porter?
I would rather have Bobby Porter.
Bobby Portis.
I'd rather have Bobby Porter. I don't really care.
Let's get Bobby Porter in there. Pat Connaughton?
Well, Pat Connaughton doesn't play the same position, Mike.
But she'd still need a fifth guy, I'm saying. Look, here's why I like P.J. Tucker.
Oh, God.
I like
Mike.
P.J. Tucker.
You and this Milwaukee Bucks. God bless America.
I like P.J. Tucker because he's been in big games and because theoretical P.J. Tucker can play some defense and played in a switching style of defense with the Houston Rockets. And it seems that Milwaukee is going to at least experiment maybe with playing some switching. They're not going to become a switching team like the Rockets were, but they may try to mix up what they do defensively, which is something that people have been clamoring for Bud to do. And I think there's a role to be played for PJ Tucker, if with the caveat that he becomes functional again. And maybe you're right. Maybe he's completely washed up and his career is over. But I'm betting that there's at least a semi-reclamation project here and that he has a moment in the playoffs. He may not be a guy that impacts game after game after game, but I'm betting that there's a game or two that PJ Tucker makes a contribution and helps the Milwaukee Bucks win.
Okay, I have a question for
a
you.
A playoff game or two.
I've got a question for you. He's played 10 years in the league, and I know there was a first year, then there was a long gap in between, and then he's played 9 or 10 years in the league. How many playoff games do you think he's played in his 9-year NBA career, Mike? And he was on the Houston Rockets.
I would say he's probably played, let's see, I'd say 45.
He's played 50. He's played 50 okay. NBA playoff games. What do you think his shooting percentage is in the 50 NBA playoff games that he's played?
His overall field goal percentage?
Yes, overall field goal playoff percentage.
Well, I'm guessing that he shoots pretty much nothing but threes in the playoffs. So, and he's probably at best a league average 3-point shooter. So I'm going to say, boy, I'm having a lot of hard time talking tonight. I'm going to say that he shoots about 34%.
You're pretty close. He's 32.5%.
Okay.
He is not your answer if you're the Milwaukee Bucks. No offense, Milwaukee. Right, he's not your answer.
Austin Rivers?
I'd rather have Austin Rivers than PJ Tucker.
All right. The people are talking Austin Rivers to the Bucks if the Knicks might buy Austin Rivers out. And then Milwaukee is one of the teams that'd be interested. Milwaukee and the Lakers were the two places I heard for Austin Rivers.
Dude, Austin Rivers, he's literally the journeyman's journeyman.
He is. They might as well put his picture next to journeyman in the NBA dictionary because he clearly is a guy that is going to float around. And I think Austin Rivers, look, if you're starting and relying on Austin Rivers to do real things for your team on a consistent basis, I'm not sure that I want him in that role. But if he's my ninth man and I can roll him out there and see what I'm getting from him, he has size. He has the ability to get hot and score a little bit. So I think for a contending team, he's the kind of guy in a buyout that to me makes sense because he's not a guy that I don't think any team that would pick him up would say, oh, this guy's a starter. He's going to play 38 minutes a game for us in the playoffs. I don't think anybody would be looking at him like that. And so if you're just looking at him as a guy who could come in off the bench and potentially provide you with some instant offense for a game or two and swing a game, I think he could be really good in that role for a good team.
I agree. I mean, he's a good role player. That's what he is. And like I said, real quick, PJ, did you know that's not his real name?
Well, no, I don't. I guess I didn't. What's
his name?
His name
is Anthony Leon Tucker.
All right.
PJ stands for Pops Jr.
Okay.
Thanks, basketball reference.
Hey, it's stuck. That's good.
And nice. here's my other thing to PJ Tucker. He's older than me. Okay.
Well, maybe the Bucks will sign you next.
Hey, listen. I could probably stand in the corner and play 14 minutes and 12 and a half minutes per game and not score a basket. I could do that for sure. Sign me up. I might even be faster than PJ Tucker at this point. And I don't think I don't have the lateral foot speed, but I bet you if I had raced him, I could have a chance, Mike. What do you think? Think there's any chance?
I would say no.
Oh, okay. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure you're not beating a professional athlete in the NBA.
Oh, come on.
Wait.
No NBA player. I couldn't beat him up and down the floor.
Taco Fall. I'd take you against Taco. Bol Bol would take like four strides and he'd be down the half court. Bol Bol would outrace you.
Okay.
You might beat him in a 5-yard sprint, but you're not beating Bol Bol the length of the floor.
Okay.
I got you against Taco Fall for sure.
I think that I could beat Boban down the floor.
Yeah, you probably could beat Boban.
I think I could beat Kristaps Porzingis in his one knee down the floor.
No.
Is he fast?
He's faster than you.
Okay.
Listen, this is just me just being goofball anyway. So, all right. So that was the first winner. The only other winner that we have that's on a bit of a winning streak is the Phoenix Suns, and they just continue, Mike. They just continue to win. They are the second seed in the West, and I really think, Mike, that they are going to be the number one or the two seed at this point, right? I mean, the Lakers are in a free fall. I don't see any way. I mean, Denver's four games behind them. Portland's four games behind them. The Lakers aren't going to pass them. The Clippers, they've been very eh. I mean, in comparison, I just think the Phoenix Suns, you're looking at the Phoenix Suns and the Utah Jazz being the number one and the two seed, and I don't think before the season anyone would have predicted that, right?
No, I don't think certainly not both of those teams finishing up there.
You could have argued Utah for sure. I wouldn't have thought. I mean, when we talked about Phoenix, we talked about them being like the sixth seed and being a play-in game team, right?
I
mean,
yeah, I guess I would have had them probably in the range of the 7-8 because I think we'd probably put Dallas up into that top six group and slid Phoenix down into the 7-8 play-in range. So Phoenix have been, look, they've played really, really well, and they have the second best point differential in the Western Conference, and they're just behind their third overall. So you have Utah has the best point differential, then the Bucks, and then Phoenix. So clearly, like, it's not a fluke at this point. And I know I said a couple weeks ago, I'm like, I don't know. I think they'd be a little bit fraudulent as a number one seed just because, and I still think that if they finish number one, I still think they're a little bit fraudulent because I'm not sure of those top six teams, how many teams I would pick Phoenix over, even if they finish with the number one seed. Would you take in a series with the Clippers, would you take Phoenix or the Clippers?
I would probably take the Clippers primarily because of Kawhi and Paul George. But
yeah, I think I'd be surprised
if the Phoenix beat them? Would I be surprised? No, because we know the Clippers' legacy. I mean, we know their history.
A healthy Lakers team, you're clearly taking the Lakers. Denver against Phoenix, I'd take Denver. Portland, McCollum's back, Dame in the playoffs. Maybe they get Nurkic back at some point. I'd say that's a toss-up. I don't know which team. I don't know which of those two teams I'd pick. I would honestly maybe lean towards Portland for all the reasons we talked about earlier with Dame. Spurs, I think I'd take Phoenix over the Spurs. Suns and the Mavericks. I don't know. I'd have a hard time picking against Luka in that series if Porzingis was even remotely healthy. So I guess my point here is that Phoenix could finish with the number one seed, and yet I still think that I look at some of those playoff matchups and I'm not sure that I'd favor them in a first round series, depending on who they drew in that first round. And look, they've had a really good season. Chris Paul's made a big difference. Booker's been really good. Ayton, I think, is playing a role maybe better than what people thought he might be capable of, meaning that he's fitting in with what they need him to do. He's not necessarily blossoming into the star that you would think of as a number one pick, but he's doing the things that he needs to do for that team to be successful at this point in their development. Eventually, they're going to need him to do more and be more, but for what they have right now, he's had a really good season playing the role that they need him to play in order to have the team have success.
Yep, I agree. I completely agree. So those are my winners, Mike. Those are the only two teams that are on a winning streak more than two games. So now we're going to turn to the losers, and we have to start.
There's one other winning streak we have to talk about.
Oh, the Houston Rockets
well, have now won one in a row.
I included them in my losers, Mike. Even though they won one, they lost 20 in a row. I was gonna do them last though because I figured that's the team we're going to talk about with a trade situation.
Sure.
So the first team I have, and this is also all the teams that are on these losing streaks are possible trade scenario teams. So the first team we're going to start with is the Raptors of Tampa Bay, Toronto, whatever city they're in right now, because obviously they're not playing in Toronto. I think the Raptors have to be sellers at this point, Mike. I think Kyle Lowry should be traded. I don't know whether they will trade him. They lost to the Cavs the other night, and I watched that entire game. Despite the fact that last week on the episode I said I didn't want to watch any of the Cavs, I want you to know I've watched every Cavs game since then, despite the fact that they've not looked very good. They ended up beating Toronto. Toronto looks terrible.
What's going on there? I don't understand. When you look at their roster, yeah, it's still hard to kind of wrap your head around the fact that they've been as bad as they have.
Okay, so did you see the video of Siakam's? He's missed 5 game winners, 4 of which have gone in and out. Have you seen that? Did you see the video circulating on Twitter? Listen,
I have not.
They have to be getting a lot of bad bounces, bad luck losses, and things like this. I mean, the Cavs game, though, wasn't a bad luck loss. They just got outplayed. Sexton and Garland played really well. I had to work in a little bit of Cavs talk here, Mike. I apologize. But the Cavs looked really good in that game, and Toronto did not. So my main thought is Toronto has to sell. They have to get rid of Kyle Lowry. I think Miami makes a lot of sense. I think Philadelphia 76ers could make a lot of sense for veteran leadership. I don't think Milwaukee will work because I don't think the money can work there. I don't think I also had heard New Orleans is a possible, like, Lonzo Ball for Kyle Lowry swap. I don't necessarily know that that does anything for either team, especially because Lonzo Ball's on an expiring this year, and he's going to, from all reports, get paid a lot of money, and I don't quite know if that makes a lot of sense, but I think he's definitely going to get traded. I don't know where. I think, like I said, I think Miami and Philly are the most likely spots. Maybe the Knicks, but I think I don't know the Knicks can make it work with money. That would be their thing. So I think he either ends up
in Miami, Philadelphia, or he stays in Toronto. I don't think he's going to go anywhere else because I don't see any other contenders that either A, need him, or B, have the right money/salary/players that Toronto, draft picks that Toronto would want back. So I think Philly and Miami have the most need for Kyle Lowry, and I think they also each have at least some assets. I think Philly's package that they could put together is a little bit better because they have some more tradable first-round picks. And I think with Thybul and who am I forgetting? And Tyrese Maxey. I think between Maxey, Thybul, and the picks that they could potentially throw in, I think that that's the spot where it's most likely. Miami could maybe get in there, but I don't see anybody else, either for reasons that they don't need him or they just can't make it work salary cap wise and fitting him in under their, you know, into their budget. So if he moves, I think he's going to the Sixers or the Heat.
Okay. That makes sense to me.
Hey, coaches, parents, and group leaders. I want to introduce you to our newest sponsor, SnapRaise. SnapRaise is the nation's largest digital donation platform built to help teams, youth groups, and clubs raise money quickly and efficiently without selling products. SnapRaise builds your group a customizable campaign website, and students use their mobile devices to connect and engage with their biggest fans. My son's high school team used SnapRaise this season, and our team raised all the money they needed to fund their season and then some. Getting SnapRaise started is quick and free. Just visit snapraise.com and you'll get connected to a local SnapRaise expert in no time.
All right, so one of those teams you just mentioned is on a losing streak of 4 games, the Miami Heat. They've lost 4 in a row. And they recently played the Cavs, and actually that was another close game. The Heat just haven't looked good. Once again, I think they're a player short. And listen, there's been a lot of reports. I think the bubble is wearing on some of these teams. I really think. And the ramifications of the bubble, who knew what the ramifications were going to be? I think some of these teams, you're seeing some of the teams that were in there the longest are just, they're falling apart. They're not playing as well. They're tired. The short off season, all these things. So I think Miami definitely needs to make a trade. I don't know what the trade is. I think if they really, really, really think they have any chance at contending, I would do whatever I can to get Kyle Lowry because he's probably the best player that's going to get traded over this trade deadline. Would you agree with that? Is there another player you would rather have that's likely open?
No, if I have a need at point guard or in the backcourt, I think clearly then Lowry is the guy that I want to target. All the other names on the trade board, to me, they all have potential downsides, whether it's salary, whether it's the player themselves. There's nobody else that I think moves the needle as much as Lowry does. I mean, there are some interesting pieces, like Oladipo could be interesting, but it seems like nobody really knows how to read what this guy is at this point, both physically and where he is as an actual NBA basketball player. You hear all kinds of different things of what teams are offering for him, what they think they can get him for. And it's, I mean, I've heard things that I'm like, there's no way I'd give up that much for Oladipo. And then I've heard other trades where I'm like, that's all you're going to get for Oladipo. So I think that he's being wildly valued. The value that teams are assigning to him, I think, has a great variability amongst teams. And so it'll be interesting to see what Houston ends up doing, what package they end up getting for him. Sounds like, I know there's been talk out there that he wants to go to Miami. I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't know that I like the fit necessarily for Oladipo in Miami. I think I'd rather see him go somewhere else. Where that somewhere else might be, I'm not 100% sure.
Well, I think, saw Clippers. I saw Clippers as an option.
The Clippers traded, I forget the guy's name. I don't even want to try to pronounce it, but young guy that they traded to Sacramento basically to free up some salary space underneath the hard cap so that theoretically it also freed a roster spot so that they could maybe try to do something here at the deadline. I don't think the Clippers have enough to be able to get Oladipo. Maybe they can work in a third team or somehow swing something to make it happen. But even with that being said, like the Clippers, it feels like the Clippers need more of a facilitator playmaking type of guard as opposed to another kind of a scoring wing like Oladipo is. It feels like there's better fits out there. I think the Clippers want a point guard. Like if you could somehow figure out a way to get Kyle Lowry to the Clippers, I think that would be a huge, huge pickup for them. But I just don't think it's possible because of Lowry making whatever he's making, $30 million, and the Clippers basically having no space, and they don't have any players really that anybody necessarily would want that would allow them to match salary. So I think that's going to be really, really tough. Like I said, I think Lowry goes to either the Sixers or the Heat when all is said and done. And I don't know, Miami, here's my thing with Miami. And I guess if you were looking at the standings in the East, there's a clear tier of Philly, Brooklyn, Milwaukee, and then all of those teams below that. I think at this point, the ship has sailed on the Celtics as being a team that you could legitimately see winning the Eastern Conference. Do you agree there?
Oh, yeah, they lost to the Cavs. They're out.
Okay. I mean, there's no scenario where Kemba Walker gets healthy and suddenly they creep back up to number three or numbers five, whatever, and they win that first round series. You can't see them getting out of the Eastern Conference, right?
No, I don't see it at all.
No, I don't see it either. So the only team that you would even consider as being having a potential beyond those top three seeds is Miami. Obviously, they did it last year, but it just feels like something is off with this team, and maybe it's the hangover from the bubble. Maybe it's the physical toll of playing all those games and combined with the mental stress of being in the bubble and being in the finals and everything. As you said, it feels like those bubble teams are starting to feel the effects of being in there so long. And so at this point, I legitimately do not think that Miami can win the Eastern Conference. I think your Eastern Conference champions are going to come from the group of Philly, Brooklyn, and Milwaukee. And I know that's nothing earth-shattering, but I don't see anybody cracking that top three. Miami would be the closest, but I don't see it.
Yep. That's 100% correct. I don't think anyone's cracking that top three. I don't think anyone's cracking the Brooklyn Nets. And they're playing without, right now, you know, two of their players, and they're still winning games. So, you know, I don't think anyone's cracking that team. So the other finals team, the Lakers, obviously LeBron's injury, major, out for probably a month plus. Okay. AD is still not back. Haven't heard any timetable on his return. He's going to get evaluated, I believe, next week. So you have to think, Mike, the Lakers are going to free fall unless they make a trade. Now, I don't know that they have anything to trade that's valuable. I mean, that's going to be able to have them move the needle.
I keep hearing that if they want to trade somebody that has some value, that KCP is the guy.
KCP, yeah. KCP, but what are you going to get for him?
and he was huge for them.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Bubble. Like,
I just don't see. Yeah, I don't see.
The ball, see... Mike. They dropped the ball. Here's how they dropped the ball. They let Rondo walk. Okay, and listen, one thing we have to talk about, Mike. They're not on the winning streak anymore. The Atlanta Hawks are tearing it up. Nate McMillan, props to you guys. Like, I thought that team was dead in the water. Dead in the water. I think as since he took over, they're 8-1. Okay.
They've had a nice schedule. They've had a nice schedule for Nate McMillan to ease his way in.
But I know. But at the same time, you got to give them props. They still took care of business. Okay. They still took care of business. They let Rondo walk, the Lakers. They let him walk. And I'm not saying that he was going to be a huge difference maker, but they let him walk. They didn't really replace him. They brought Harrell in. He's been pretty good. They brought Schroeder in. He's been okay.
Schroeder.
I'm going to keep calling him Schroeder. He may not be from Peanuts, but I'm going to keep calling him that, okay? The Lakers are just not a team that can win without their two star players. But when those two star players play, the roles are clearly defined. But if they're not out there, they are a dysfunctional unit. Everything I've seen since, you know, I watched bits and pieces of the game tonight. They were a discombobulated mess, and they hung in there for a while, and Zion and Ingram they ended up taking care of business. And I just think that the Lakers are in big trouble. I think the Lakers are in big trouble for a playoff seeding. I'm not ready to say they're in big trouble for not playing in the playoffs, because once again, I don't think that seed really truly matters for them, because I think they could beat any of those teams. Now, obviously, you would prefer to have the number one seed or the number two seed or a top four seed. Okay, you would prefer to have that, but I think they can beat any of those teams. The problem that I have is Anthony Davis, are you going to be healthy enough to play? LeBron James, when are you going to be healthy enough to play if you're out for a month? And you know LeBron takes immaculate care of his body, and he is in good physical condition. What's the build-up period? He always has a build-up period. He's not going to have that if he's going to be out for a month and a half, 2 months, because we're going to be close to the playoffs. So that's what you have to be concerned with if you're the Lakers, in my opinion.
All right, I'm going to piggyback on what you said. I think there's two things that have an impact for the Lakers as we look at what this next month is going to look like, and then we look and project into potential playoff series. So first of all, over the course of the next month, I think you mentioned that the Lakers look totally discombobulated. And you think about all the years when LeBron was here in Cleveland and he sat, and basically the on-off stats for LeBron here in Cleveland were ridiculous. When he was on the floor, whatever, just throw a number out there, they're plus 13. When he's off the floor, they were minus 13. And the Lakers, it's been sort of a similar thing, maybe not quite as stark. But part of that problem is that with a LeBron-centric team, everything that you do, especially on offense, is built around what LeBron does, because he has the ball in his hands 75% of the possession. He's making the decisions. He's determining what happens on every position. And so now when you take that guy away, well, the system no longer functions in the same way. So I think the Lakers are going to struggle, which means they're going to move down in the standings. The question is, how far down can they go? And so you look at the teams that are immediately behind them. I expect Denver to pass them. I expect Portland to pass them. And honestly, I expect Dallas to have a pretty good opportunity to pass the Lakers as well. San Antonio, I'm not so sure. But let's say that the Lakers drop down to where they have to play in the play-in game. And now you're the Utah Jazz or you're the Phoenix Suns, and you've worked hard the whole regular season. Man, we've had a great year. We're the number one seed in the West. We're the number two seed in the West. Last year, we didn't even make the playoffs. Well, guess what, fellas? Now you get to play the Los Angeles Lakers with LeBron and AD back healthy in the first round of the playoffs. That's your reward. So I think that's the danger. I'm not speaking at it from a Jazz and Suns perspective or a one and two seeds perspective, but that's also a problem for the Lakers, because now if you come in as the – let's say you're a non-home court advantage team, you're going to end up playing three really tough series. Whereas potentially, if you're the one or the two seed, maybe there's a chance that you get a weaker – maybe there's a chance you get a weaker team. Yep. And when you don't, when you got to play three tough series and then play the finals, and you're talking about all the wear and tear that we were discussing earlier from the bubble and the quick restart and guys coming off injuries and not be able to ramp up, I think that's a really tall order for the Lakers to come out of the 7 or 8 play-in seed and win an NBA championship. I think that road is going to be really, really tough. And if those two guys are not at 100% health, which certainly is possible, then I think it's going to be a struggle for the Lakers to get back to where we kind of thought, which is that they were going to be the presumptive favorites to win a title.
Yep. I agree. I you have to be concerned with the Lakers, and there's just a lot of unknowns. We don't know how healthy they're going to be and when they're going to be back and all that fun stuff. So I think we have to make the argument of a wait-and-see kind of attitude. And
Evan Fournier for KCP, I read that.
That's a terrible trade.
Right. Why would you do that? I mean, I guess the theory is that Fournier is a little bit more of a playmaker. So in the time, in the absence of LeBron, you could give the ball to Fournier and let him do some stuff.
How many more games are you going to win if Evan Fournier over KCP?
Right.
The answer is zero.
I think the question is, which one of those guys helps you win playoff games?
Because, and KCP is also a clutch client. There's no way that happens.
Right. I agree with you 100%. But that's just something that I've heard because, again, the Lakers' options are pretty limited. The two guys that they have that are tradable are KCP, and he makes, like, I forget what his salary is, but it's in the $12 to $13 million range, somewhere in there. So theoretically, he could bring you back a pretty decent player. Then you have Talen Horton Tucker, who makes, like, he's on his rookie deal. He makes, like, $1.7 million or something. And so if you're trading that contract, you're not getting back anything of any real value that's going to help you win in the playoffs by trading him. And then you're talking about putting a draft pick in there, which I think I read that the Lakers, I think they could trade like their 2027 first round draft pick, which, again, what does that mean to the Lakers? Probably nothing. Yeah. And what does that mean to the team that's acquiring that pick? Probably nothing.
Yep.
Probably nothing at some point. So,
all right. So the last team we were going to talk about is the team that actually won a game, but they had lost 20 in a row. Congrats to the Houston Rockets. You will not lose 26 in a row like the Cleveland Cavaliers. So congrats to you. But, man, that team is terrible. I think they need to try to trade Oladipo. I don't know what they can even get for Oladipo at this point. But, you know, I think he's got a good chance of being traded. Other than that, I don't know what the team's going to do. And I don't know, is there a team that's in the running that Oladipo really makes a difference to? I don't know. The way that he's played, I don't see it.
I mean, if you get 80% of third team All-NBA Victor Oladipo from whatever season that was, the 2017-2018 season when he was with Indiana. If you get 80% of that guy and he buys in on the defensive end of the floor, then I think he can help teams. Is he a guy who's going to lead your team to an NBA title? No, he's not. He's not on that level. He's not a guy that is going to take your team from terrible to being an NBA title contender. But could he make a difference for some of these teams at the top? I think if you put him on Denver, I think he makes Denver better. Now, does he make them
infinitely
NBA
better?
Title? Right. How big is that impact? I think they're definitely better with Victor Oladipo, but are they better where before I would have said, I don't know if they can make the Western Conference Finals. Does he make them now suddenly a legitimate title contender? I'm not sure he moves the needle that far. And Miami, I don't know. I mean, are you taking away Tyler Hero's minutes? Are you playing Hero with Victor Oladipo? Where does he fit in? What do you have to give up if you're Miami in order to get him? I don't know. To me, Oladipo, if you're getting the best version of him, then I think I can talk myself into what he can do for my team. If I'm getting this guy who I continue to not really know what he is, both physically and as a player, and trying to project him into my roster and what things he can do that can impact winning and help my team get an NBA title, I don't know because I don't know where he is both physically and as a basketball player. And it's sort of the same thing we talked about with PJ Tucker. Houston's been such a mess that I think it's hard to evaluate a guy if you took him and put him into a winning environment with a team that actually had a legitimate chance to win a title, might he look different than he does playing with a bunch of guys who have lost 19 or 20 games in a row? I think the answer is he probably would look different. The question is that difference enough to make an impact on one of these teams that they're going to actually give up something of value in order to trade for Oladipo? I think that's the big question. And I would guess that the package that Houston gets for him, whatever they ultimately end up taking, is going to be, I'm just going to use the word underwhelming. I'm going to guess it's pretty underwhelming what it's going to take to get Oladipo out of Houston.
I would have to agree. I mean, like, I think you're going to get peanuts, quite frankly. I mean, he's not been playing very well, and he just doesn't look right. So I think, you know, I think you can get him for cheap. If it's just how much are they willing to give, like, how much is Houston willing to settle for is really what the question is going to be.
Right. I agree. Right? Yeah. I agree.
All right, Mike, I don't have anything else. Do you have anything else you want to say? We're at an hour and 15 minutes almost. Last guy,
Aaron Gordon. Where do you think Aaron Gordon ends
up? Well, I told you what my dream was before we started recording, Mike. I want him to end up on the Chicago Bulls so that we can just have a dunk contest all game long between Zach LaVine and Aaron Gordon.
All right.
I don't think Aaron Gordon gets traded.
Okay.
I don't think he gets traded.
Fair enough.
Because I think Magic's going to overvalue him, and they're not going to be willing to give him up for less than that.
All right. I'm going to throw an outlier out there. I'm going to say somehow the Portland Trail Blazers figure out a way to bring on Aaron Gordon.
That's impressive.
So maybe you got Anthony Simons. Maybe you got Nasir Little. Maybe you've got – I forget what their draft pick situation is. But I think they have some pieces and some salary. Theoretical Rodney Hood could be involved in that trade. And I think you put Aaron Gordon on that team and he upgrades you defensively, makes you more versatile, maybe gives you a better opportunity to weather some of the defensive hardships that you might have with the two little guards, Lillard and McCollum. And my dog is telling me that
it is time
to wrap up the podcast. And we're going to go ahead and do just that. Trade deadline coming on Thursday. We may jump on for a late night trade deadline wrap up show on Thursday. If we do, we'll post it in our feed on Friday.
If we do, we'll make sure the dog goes out before we record.
We'll make sure the dog gets out before we record.
My dog's been sitting here the whole podcast laying down quiet, just so you know.
And he was out before we recorded. But at any rate, nonetheless, we are going to wrap things up here. Please check out all the other shows on the Hoopheads Pod Network. Look for our interview with Brett Nelson from Holy Cross dropping on Friday, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.